Hello, my name is Gail Whiffen Coyle, and I am the associate editor here at Friends Journal. And today we are talking with Kevin Rutledge, who is a January author in our January issue on Quakers and the political process. Today I'm super happy to be talking with Kevin because we're going to get an insider's perspective from Iowa. Less than a week to go before the Iowa caucus is starting on Monday, February 1st. So there's a lot going on in Iowa now. So thank you so much for joining with us today, Kevin, during this busy week, I'm sure.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for the opportunity to contribute and write an article for the January edition right before the Iowa caucus. So
thanks. Of course. Yeah, we're so happy this worked out. So Kevin is the grassroots education coordinator with the American Friends Service Committee's presidential campaign project in Iowa, and this is part of their Governing Under the Influence project, which aims to expose the corporate influence on presidential campaigns and candidates. So Kevin's article is the very first article in our January issue, and it's called Bird Dogging the Candidates, and is all about governing under the influence and what that project is doing. So Kevin, why don't you start off by telling us what's going on this week in Iowa? You had emailed me yesterday that you guys visited like 13 campaign offices yesterday. So what were you doing when you visited with the offices?
Yeah, so we stopped at almost all the presidential campaign offices in Iowa, or in Des Moines at least, and we handed them a copy of our report here. It's about the for-profit prison industry and in shaping the U.S. immigrant and detention policies. And so we just went to these offices. We had like 10 or 12 people. We split up and, basically explained what the problem is, how much money from these private prisons are is in the process through campaign donations and lobbying and the revolving door to get more people detained in immigrant detention centers with this 34,000 immigrant detention quota. It costs about $2 billion a year. And 9 out of the 10 largest ICE detention centers are privately owned by either Corrections Corporation of America or GEO Group, which are the two biggest private prisons. So all the campaigns, they seemed pretty open and welcoming. And a lot of them had never heard of this policy before or really don't know that much about it. So it's just another way of how we're just educating the whole campaign and the whole Iowa caucus as a whole, New Hampshire primaries as a whole. They did the same thing a couple weeks ago in New Hampshire, and it was successful. And so we decided to do the same thing here.
Awesome. Yeah. So you guys are really just utilizing the fact that Iowa and New Hampshire get so much attention because they are, well, Iowa's the first caucus, New Hampshire's the first primary. That's the very first voting in the nation that is kicking off this nomination process for the 2016 election, which we have heard so much about for the past, over a year now. So it sounds like your main issues with governing under the influence is for-profit prisons, immigration and detention around that, and just anything related to the military-industrial complex. And so what is the tactic and strategy to get these issues more in the front of the line, like on the table, getting people talking about it? The name of your article, Bird Dogging the Candidates. What is bird dogging?
Right. So I'll start a little bit. What governing under the influence means is how our country's lawmakers are under the influence of money, corporate money, super PACs, lobbyists, special interest groups. And our logo is actually a White House with a money flag just flapping in the wind. This is a way most people from both sides, Democrat, Republican, people who don't care about politics. They're like, yeah, there's way too much money. Like, I can identify, I get it. And so we're asking the candidates, the presidential candidates, you know, who profits from these policies when these corporations are spending millions to influence, you know, war and incarceration policies. And so how we're doing that is we hold these bird dog trainings, which, all right, bird dogging is essentially just following a candidate and asking a question. And so we've asked about 350 questions between Iowa and New Hampshire. And it's crazy because, you know, just this month, everybody's getting all up and wild and a lot of more attention around the presidential campaigns where we've been doing it for almost a year and a half now. So it's good to see more attention to these issues. So we have these bird dog trainings where we train people on how to ask these tough questions of candidates, because it's so hard and difficult when you raise your hand and you're in a crowd of 300 people and you're trying to remember specific words and what to say and not allow that candidate to, you know, go off this way or this way and talk about any issue, but to be on point and direct on what specifically they'll do to something. And so, right, so some of our issues include the military-industrial complex with these Pentagon contractors, and people aren't talking about those things. There's a lot of talk about war and ISIS and ISIL and everything in the Middle East, but, you know, who's profiting from that? Who are these corporations that are winning these, you know, $55 billion, you know, trillion-dollar I mean, it's just, it's incredible how much money is being spent and how much our government is spending to create more weapons of war, and who's profiting from those. So right. We also ask questions about nuclear weapons, you know, a $1 trillion nuclear weapons plan, and it's going to enrich a lot of these Pentagon contractors.
Yeah. So these are big, big issues that affect our entire political system. And when it comes round to an election year, this is definitely the time to get it out there on the table, because who we elect needs to know about these influences. So really big issues. And bird dogging, it seems sort of like really simple of a concept, just like ask the question, get the candidate to talk about it. You know, it's pretty simple, right? But it sounds like, you know, you get nervous when, you know, you're going to ask a question to Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump. So what are the trainings like? How do you guys get just regular citizen volunteers ready to stand up and bring up these really important topics and be taken seriously so that the candidate can respond in a serious way?
And there's so many variables that can pop up randomly into play where candidates may not take questions at all. And so you'll have to go up and talk to them one-on-one, where you change your whole question. You don't have, you know, 30 seconds to ask. You have maybe 10. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of getting in the right position, or like we like to video record or audio record our interactions, and then so we can post it to our website, gy.afsc.org, for the whole, you know, the whole world to see, and then push that on social media. So about our bird dog training, so it's pretty fun what we do. We use these role play scenarios where whoever's leading it, typically staff, we act like a candidate. You know, we have our whole candidate persona, its background, and like, you know, mine is Frank the Tank McStakerson, you know, just like fun and silly, like from a made up state, and just talking on issues and just randomly coming into the room. People aren't expecting it, and just giving a stump speech and then taking questions. And so that's the best way for people to really get that firsthand experience of like, okay, this is silly, but I'm going to try and ask a question of this candidate. And then we talk about it afterwards. Like, okay, what makes a good question? What wasn't a good question? How do you make it a good question? Like, what are obstacles that come up, you know, forgetting what you're saying, or like, there's a lot of obstacles that come into play, but we try to have the best strategies in place so that they're ready when the real time comes. It's one thing to say somebody, hey, here's a question, just go ask a candidate, right? That's all you have to do. But then when there's all sorts of media from all over the country, all over the world there, and you're standing up and like, you know, you get nervous and like, oh, all these people are looking at me. Am I saying this right? Am I sounding okay? I mean, there's so many things that come into place. And so, yeah, we've been it's been a really awesome journey so far.
Yeah, so you guys build up the volunteers' confidence and get them ready to ask the good questions. That's exactly. Awesome. So you're from Iowa, and you joined AFSC in 2014, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what would you say makes GUI and this presidential campaign project a project of a Quaker organization? What do you think is the Quaker connection there that AFSC is representing?
Yeah, so the American Friends Service Committee, I mean, it's incredible. They've been around almost 100 years and works on all types of peace and social justice issues. So AFSC as a whole, they work on a lot of the issues that we work on. So it's really a compilation of kind of pulling different areas we work on into one project and just lifting that, catapulting that message, you know, into the 2016 elections where everybody's paying attention. And so it's just a great way of bringing younger people. We've been great at getting younger people here. My colleague Hector, he just graduated from Drake. He's young, Latino. He's been great getting a lot of Latinos out, a lot of younger people, college and high school. And so, I mean, just people of all kind of faiths and backgrounds and no face, or, I mean, just people who are just tired and becoming awake of what's really happening in the political process and just being aware, and especially in this age of technology. Everything is up on the internet. Everything's on Facebook, Twitter, videos, memes, all of that.
Yeah. So also in your article, you talked about you have deep family roots in Quaker activism. Your great-grandfather, Chester A. Graham, there's actually a profile of him in an old French journal article, I think from 1972, was when the article ran. So that must be pretty cool. Have you been more recently exploring your family roots, or is this something you've always been interested in?
Yeah, so writing this article with Friends Journal, it's been a transformational, you know, self-exploration sort of experience. So my whole mom's side of the family is Quaker. You know, a lot of them went to Scattergood Friends School. Grandparents went overseas, and it's cool saying I work with AFSC, and then I meet more people. They're like, "Oh, I know your grandparents." Okay, yeah, you know, good rep. But as far as I hadn't read my great grandfather's autobiography before, or I'd read some of it, but in just realizing, wow, I'm doing everything that he's been doing. You know, he was my age when he went off to fight, and well, not fight, but go into World War I to be an ambulance driver, and that opened his eyes and ears and just what's really all the evil that's going on in the world, and dedicated his whole life to peace. And he was working on immigration issues 100 years ago. He was working on, you know, war and peace issues 100, you know, I mean, he spent his whole life as an organizer. I used to be a union organizing intern in D.C. Like, that was kind of cool. It's just it's really amazing just following the similarities and just learning so much more about my family and tying everything together. And so I actually have plans to go to Costa Rica after this whole project is ended. Monteverde Friends School is down there. It's an 8-12 bilingual school. I've got family I've never met that lives there. They moved there in the 50s. I included some of that in my article because some of them went to prison because they didn't want to enter the military draft and go to fight a war that they didn't believe in because their religion doesn't believe in that. And that's kind of cool, you know, that social justice activism in a nonviolent way. And like, it's motivating and it's encouraging. And so, I mean, it's really cool to learn about.
Yeah, that's awesome that your journey will take you on to Costa Rica. That Quaker community is very well known for anti-war and nonviolence. I mean, they founded that whole community because they wanted to be in a nation that doesn't have an army or a military. So that's pretty awesome. I'm sure that will be an amazing experience. So you're going to be there for a year volunteering, or you're
no.
not sure?
Right now, I'm just finishing. The plan is to finish the fourth quarter of the school year down there. So right at the end of March, when right as this job ends, be down there, and I don't know what'll happen next. I applied for the Peace Corps, so I might apply with the Friends Committee National Legislation. Just kind of, you know, helping other people and just being of service, and good things will happen.
Many opportunities for you. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, Kevin. We enjoyed learning about governing under the influence. Readers can check out Kevin's article in the January issue. It is called Bird Dogging the Candidates. And you can find out more about the issues that governing under the influence is exposing this presidential election. And we'll have links to AFSC's work and to the article in the show notes. So thanks so much, Kevin. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for having me, Gail.
Bye-bye.
Bye.